The art of great conversation is the most important tool that a salesperson has. It's the most important tool that any business person has, is the ability to communicate an idea with clarity and conviction.
You're listening to Stand Out, Get Noticed, the show that helps you communicate with confidence so you can stand out from the crowd and get noticed by all the right people. If you want to be a person of influence and achieve success in business and in life, this podcast is for you. To subscribe to the show, go to thecmethod.com. What's up, everyone? Welcome to episode 61 of the podcast. I am your host, Christina Canters. How are you doing today? I am doing great. I learned a new song on the ukulele last night, and I'm excited to share it with you today. So listen to the end of the episode for that one. Okay. I have an awesome guest for you this week. I'm speaking with Marcus West, who is the founder of 60 Seconds, an app that helps salespeople to write and practice their elevator or sales pitch, refine it, and receive feedback on their pitch from their team leader or coach. You know how I'm always encouraging you to practice your elevator pitch as much as you can? And if you've attended one of my workshops, you'll know how valuable it is to practice and receive this feedback on how you're communicating. So you're always tweaking your pitch to make it more and more effective. Well, this app, 60 Seconds, allows you to record yourself delivering your elevator pitch, and then you can send it to your colleagues or your presentation coach for feedback, which is pretty cool, right? We'll be talking a bit more about that in the interview. Now, Marcus himself is an expert on the topic of sales, pitching, and performance. He has a background in theatre, and his company, Inscription, has been scripting, pitching, and financing compelling stories for Australian theatre, film, and TV for over 18 years. And he uses this background to inform his own work in presentation coaching. So he works with CEOs and their firms around Australia, including KPMG, Deloitte, and Westpac, as well as politicians and barristers, to help them present their message with punch. He's also a talent coach with various TV stations, working with reporters and presenters on their own presentation and storytelling skills. See why I got him on the show? So in this conversation, we talk about pitching, what people do wrong, how they can be more effective. We talk about what you can learn from TV news reporters, and also why you should, in fact, take yourself seriously, and why we as Australians are particularly bad at it. Show notes for this episode will be at thecmethod.com/Marcus. That's M-A-R-C-U-S. Alrighty, let's get to it. Enjoy this one with Marcus West.
In 20 years of coaching people to present, which I still enjoy and still do a lot of, I think probably one of the greatest frustrations was that people would glean particular areas where they could improve what they were doing, but they wouldn't necessarily work on those as they moved forward. They would sort of accept that they needed to do A, B, and C, and then they would just go back to doing what they were doing before. So I sort of thought, well, we have to develop a way that we can introduce some accountability and do it in a way that's fun. And so that was the sort of initial vision that we had for this. And then we, spent 2.5 years building it and trialing it on more than 1,000 people and getting their feedback and doing more things to improve and make it more intuitive. And that's where we are now. And, you know, we can see the benefits that people are deriving, those people who do genuinely engage in a sustained and meaningful fashion, in a consistent way.
So what's the main thing that you're finding people are getting out of it?
Well, I think sales managers or coaches or mentors, whatever expression you want to use, they're finding the ability to coach their people really valuable in a light touch but meaningful way. So, the job of a mentor or a coach is to establish where their people are demonstrating weakness, and then they need to set a range of tasks based on that weakness, which target it and help them to improve upon where they are now over time based on tasks set. So I think that's been the real benefit. People have gone, right, well, such and such is great at engaging and building rapport with the client, but they're really not very good at having that difficult conversation at the end where they need to close the business. And so we're going to set them a task each month for the next 6 months to have that conversation. And then in between that, they can actually practice it and develop it and work away and rehearse. And that's kind of where we've seen the real benefit for people.
So many people need that. Not even salespeople, but anyone who's working in their business to influence other people and having those conversations with clients.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it's interesting because this product's been used by very high-end corporations that develop partners for professional services firms that earn lots of money, and they tend to think that the word sales is a bit of a dirty word. You know, they only engage in things like influencing or business development and things of that nature, not sales. But of course, I think that's all really a matter of semantics, because as you know, it doesn't really matter what the conversation is. If somebody is able to deliver their idea or to mount an argument or to share something in a way that captures the listener's imagination, then ultimately that's the name of the game, really. It doesn't matter whether you call it sales, business development or anything else. It's about saying something in a way that helps the audience remember it.
In terms of your background, I know you have a theatre background, is that correct?
Yeah, so I grew up with a family of educators. My dad was a headmaster for 20 years, and so I was around education and teaching, and I went into teaching for 10 years. I was head of drama at two schools and always had a strong interest in theatre and script writing and storytelling specifically. And then I just decided in the early 2000s that it might be worth my while going out on my own and using the background of the theatre, the voice training, the body language, the script writing, the storytelling, and just moving that over into a different context and still teaching people, but I guess coaching adults who probably had more motivation to listen potentially than kids who were 13 or 14 and were more interested in sport or girls or whatever else. You know.
When did you realise that those skills were transferable and applicable to professionals, people in, corporate environments?
Yeah, look, I always subconsciously recognised the significance of being able to give a commanding performance from a very early age. I guess it was just a matter of working out the language and the positioning of the offering to a corporate client, so that they could, so that it didn't seem like it was too long a bow to draw. Because I think sometimes if you're too theatrical in the offering and the language that you use, that can be, it can be a turn off to some clients because they want to be, focused on results and objectives and KPIs, and they want the language to be a little bit different, potentially not as flamboyant. That's a massive generalization, but that's generally what I find. So it's a matter of taking those principles, and as Shakespeare said, all the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. So I think that element of performance is unquestionable, but it's just a matter of how you frame it and position it for a client who has to make money and engage with their clients and do business, because obviously that's to a certain extent a serious undertaking.
Absolutely. I've had this discussion with a couple of people before where we've talked about when is it okay or not okay to use jargon when you're selling to corporates, like in terms of speaking their language. Mm. And I realized that what we do, it's essentially engagement, right? Yeah. Which is helping people to engage with each other. That's something I discovered fairly recently, because I was calling it helping you talk to each other better, which is what it is. Yeah. But I was like, no, that's not the language they use. They use the word engagement.
Yeah, look, I mean, language is a wonderful thing. I mean, you raise a real, I would say, pet topic of mine, and I'm a great hater of jargon and management speak. I like people to speak in a way that's simple and clear. And in fact, in my experience of working in corporations, the more senior you go, the greater clarity and simplicity people speak with. So your CEOs and so forth, they've just gone through all that middle management stuff. They've come out the other end. They realise that, you know, 5 minutes or 10 minutes is a lot of their time because they're very pressed. And so they're more direct, they're more straightforward, and you know where you stand. And I think that's kind of a skill that people really need to work on and develop, I think. And there's a certain element within us, I think, that we're a bit afraid of being too direct, you know. So we often hide behind language, you know, and language becomes something that obfuscates rather than illuminates, and that's something that should be avoided at all costs.
Where does that come from, that fear of being too direct?
Oh, I think, you know, the Australian context, I think, is a very interesting one. I mean, having worked in, you know, just a little story, having worked in the Channel 7 newsroom for a number of years, a lot of the TV reporters and talent, on-air talent in the Sydney newsroom were from Adelaide. And there was a lot of these young men and women had a lot of confidence about the way they delivered and did business. And so I began to think about Adelaide versus Sydney. And, you know, my view is Adelaide, of course, doesn't have any convict beginnings at all. Sydney has, of course, convict beginnings. So I think there's Australia as a nation does have a bit of a confidence issue, a bit of a chip on the shoulder. You know, not in a really nasty way, but I think we just have difficulty taking ourselves seriously. In fact, taking yourself seriously is one of the great sins, unless of course you play sport, in which case you can take yourself very seriously then. But in all other contexts, one must you know, be constantly taking the mickey out of oneself, which I think's great in one respect, but I do think it's sort of we're selling ourselves short, you know. And I think people, you know, there's nothing wrong with taking yourself seriously. You know, you don't have to be abrasive. You just have to put your game face on from time to time, and you know, and put your best foot forward, and there's nothing wrong with that. Mm. You know, to me, and the people that make a success of themselves in a corporate context are those ones that make the choice to do so,
to take themselves seriously.
Absolutely.
Going back to the pitch, so how people pitch themselves. Mm. What do you see are the biggest mistakes that people make?
I think first of all, the language might be one. They use language that's a bit confusing and a bit jargony. The timing of a pitch is really, really important too. So I think a lot of people, when they're really excited about a product that they've developed themselves, they just, you know, sort of like a whirling dervish, you know, go from meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting, just with this information pouring out of them, you know. But as they get a little bit more astute, you know, they try to think about, you know, actually what that person's interest is and how potentially the thing that they've got might be able to solve a problem for that particular person. So, you know, that's a sort of basic sort of thing of the sales conversation. So I think the ability to understand the timing of when you're going to deliver the pitch, ideally when you've listened to the person first, and you might want to adjust the pitch slightly so that it hits home a little bit more effectively. And then I think just that piece around the execution, vocally, taking your time. I think people can tend to rush. You've got to remember that when you're delivering a pitch, it's the first time, most probably, that particular person has heard what you've got to say. So don't be afraid to keep it quite sort of fundamental and straightforward. Mm. Don't rush into kind of the detail too much. Keep it very high end. I mean, ideally, an elevator pitch is about creating a question or curiosity, firing the imagination of the listener. It's not about exhaustively exploring and delivering the idea. That can come later. Okay. You know, you want to get the second meeting. That's the point of an elevator pitch. You want the person to go, that's interesting. I want to hear more.
Can we go a little bit deeper into that? Mm. So in terms of sparking that interest, getting them to want to learn more, want a second meeting, what are your tips for being able to do that?
Well, I think you can't beat talking to the right person. You know, so I think if you can do some research on who the right person is, and you can do some research on the pain, as they say, that that person has. You know, what's keeping them up at night, as they say. You know, where are they losing money, or where, you know, what's their greatest problem? And then if your idea or solution or offering can help alleviate that in some way, then you're really, you know, you're stepping off in the right spot. And I think, you know, often we can try and pitch a product to somebody and their ears aren't really going to be open because they're not the right person. We've got something, you know, it's worth doing it. It's definitely worth practicing the pitch that you've got. But I think if you can think about who that ideal person would be and how you're going to help them, then I think they're the kind of the key ingredients to go with it. And then the other thing to me is I think rehearsing and then road testing a pitch is really important, because you need to have your own sense of what you want to say, but you also want to get feedback, not from too many people, because then you can get confused and fractured and you end up saying really nothing. but, you know, probably three or four key people who can give you some, you know, straightforward advice, and then you can tighten up from there and give it a go and then tighten it again. It's very much an iterative process. But I do think in the end that you've got to instinctually stick to what you think the offering is, because if in the end you end up, you know, pitching what somebody else wants you to pitch, then you're gonna lose what's probably one of the most critical elements of a pitch, which is passion.
Absolutely. I work with individuals who, they're not necessarily salespeople going into an organization, but they're individuals who are out and about at networking events, conferences, whatever, being asked, what do you do? And then they have to deliver their personal, their overall business elevator pitch and explain what they do. And of course they're passionate about what they do and they love it, but as soon as it becomes that, oh, elevator pitch, all the passion just sort of gets sucked out of it because they're so focused on what they're actually saying, and they lose that passion.
Yeah, no, and I think you've got to, it's a bit like, it's a, to bring back, to reintroduce the idea of performance. I think, you know, a comedian, for example, will road test a joke and then, you know, adjust it and then road test it again. And then when they're actually in the process of delivering and engaging the audience in that moment, they give the impression of speaking off the cuff, but they're not speaking off the cuff. They're working on something that's really been, you know, iteratively developed. And in the same way, a sales pitch needs to look like it's something that the person just thought of, you know, and it's something that has that kind of quality of freshness to it, which I think is really important.
How else does your theatre performance drama background influence the way that you coach people now?
Well, I think, you know, if we look at it from two different perspectives, you've obviously got your training and your execution, your delivery part, and then you've got your content part, and it's about how you bring those two together. And, you know, in terms of theatre, I'm always giving clients pieces of text to work on, because I think, you know, saying words out loud is a very, very useful exercise, and beginning to explore the certain qualities of language and how your voice sounds, and to really just speak with a little bit more crispness, I think's, you know, super important.
So this is text outside. So nothing to do with what they're actually pitching. Okay.
No, I think it's like, to me, I think working on text like Shakespeare or poetry or political speeches or something that's actually got absolutely nothing to do with your sales pitch, I think is a really nice way to think about how to speak, because it's a bit like if you're a musician playing Mozart, and if you can play a bit of Shakespeare vocally, then that's going to kind of warm you up and it's going to keep your ear attuned to language and possibility and delivery. And if you can deliver a really hard piece of Shakespeare, then giving life to a speech that you've written yourself is quite straightforward.
Yeah. And you were saying the second part is the delivery or the
content?
Yeah,
so the delivery. So that the content to me is how you pull, you know, your ideas together and structure and turn a phrase, and those sorts of things are very important for content. But then I think you've got to be able to draw a line between the content and the delivery. And that is going to be that sort of passion and that sort of urgency and compulsion that you should have for sharing your idea or your story. And so when you've got that content right and you're passionate about that material, then, you know, the delivery part, I find, really tends to not entirely take care of itself, because you're always going to need a little bit of sort of polish, but if you get the message right and you think about the audience and why you want to tell them in that moment, and you've got your intention really clear, then naturally I find that the body language and the voice and the eye contact and all that sort of stuff tends to kind of take care of itself. And that's exciting. I think when there's a disconnect between the content and the audience and the storyteller, that's when you end up with something that might be a bit dry or kind of slightly misses the mark, or, you know, is not terribly inspiring.
A previous guest who I interviewed on this show, her name is Natalie. She was talking about how she was explaining something similar, but she says that it's like you see the bottom drop out of someone's speech, and it's like they're completely disconnected from what they're actually saying.
Yeah,
and it's like they're floating along the top without fully engaging with the content.
No, I agree. I definitely agree with that. I mean, 100%. Just on that, I think, so a lot of the coaching that I did in television for TV reporters and TV newsreaders was a lot to do with the connection between content and the voice. So there's an expression that voice coaches have, which is about connecting the thought to the breath. So as you breathe in, you think of the idea, and then you connect those two together so that when the sound comes out, it matches the words, it matches the idea. And if you listen to TV reporting, particularly if you happen to be, say, on holidays in a regional area, then you'll notice that they start the sentence like that and then they finish it like that. Or if they're doing sport, they'll talk a bit like this. And so they develop these weird kind of sounds, potentially, you know, some sort of DNA thing that's floated through from the BBC to the ABC to, you know, all Australian reporters on television. And they develop this sort of tonal kind of quality, which is very distracting to message, because you can't actually, you got to get through the sound before you can actually engage with the content. We all know we can hear the news from miles away, you know. We can hear the quality of the way that people talk. It's not like anything else particularly. So I think those kind of that's an interesting lesson about that idea of how we can connect our breath to the idea.
I haven't heard of that one before, connecting the breath to the idea. Yeah. And you're totally right. All the news readers do sound the same.
Well, if you think about the breath to the idea, the probably the most famous exponent or coach of this idea is a lady called Patsy Rodenberg, who wrote a very famous book called The Need for Speech. And she talks about the idea of vocal impulse, or that sort of sense of urgency for wanting to tell a story or say something or express a point of view. And so, you know, she says that, I mean, my sort of anecdote that I use is if you're at a dinner party and you've had a few glasses of wine and somebody says something that you really vehemently disagree with, you find that the thought comes to you, you draw breath, your core sort of engages, you're sitting up and you're sort of cocked and ready, lips parted, you're taking a breath, you're ready to speak. And that is, I believe, and that's what Patsy Rodenberg calls vocal impulse. That's what I believe good speakers are able to create artificially, because what they do is they think about their audience sitting in front of them. They run through their story and they work out why it's important to the audience there and why they need to tell it. And then in the few moments before they get up to speak, they kind of get their head into the right space of why this is important that I share this with you at this moment in time. And that's when you end up with that kind of nice connection between audience and speaker.
Yeah. That would work really nicely as a visualization exercise, like breathing in, like even before a presentation, like breathing, I encourage people to breathe anyway, take some deep breaths to calm their nerves.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And that would be great, you know, breathing in, you know, the importance of this speech, like what's the depth behind
it.
And then as you speak, then breathing that out,
that's
sharing
it.
That message.
That's it, 100%.
So good. So going back to 60 Seconds, the app, I remember we spoke a while ago, you were developing, or it had been developed for sales managers to be using within their teams, but you were talking about developing a version of it for individuals as well.
Yeah.
Can you tell me more about what's happening with that?
Yeah. So look, there are essentially four parts to what the solution offers. There's the app for the individual to rehearse. There's the sort of manager dashboard for the manager or the mentor to coach their team. There's the sharing part where all the great video resources are kept that people can engage with and have a conversation around and borrow scripts and things like that. And then the last part is where the management can analyze the data. But what we want to roll out, and this will probably be in early August or late July, is a standalone version of the app which individuals will be able to use to develop their sales pitches. And it's got a whole lot of functionality around the way that you script it. It's got an auto cue that scrolls. It's got a person that looks at you. It's got a little bit of sort of cute functionality which helps you to kind of generate a stronger, more compelling performance. And so that's something that that we'll have ready in late July, and something that we'll be able to share with you know, individuals to be able to help them improve their presentation skills.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Is there a little... that little person that looks at you, do they give you feedback when you? Do they go, "That was great"?
Well, what they do is we had an actor essentially listen to a pitch and to look straight down the camera and to sort of listen to the pitch and kind of smile and nod at key moments, and that's pretty much what she does. Because my experience of coaching people for television is that they can't really engage with just an inanimate object. Whereas if they've got a person looking back at them, like FaceTime, then, you know, they kind of think, I'll have a conversation with him or with her. And that was the sort of guiding principle there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It takes some getting used to rehearsing a presentation or a pitch to a blank wall.
Well, I think the fact that you're rehearsing at all is a very good thing, because I think most people, you know, don't do that. We have an unfortunate... It comes back to that idea we discussed before about not taking yourself seriously. I think the idea of rehearsal to a lot of Australians means that you're taking yourself too seriously. So we're much better taking a position, at least, you know. The theory would be that we're much better off taking a position of she'll be right on the night. And, of course, we all know that often she won't.
Yep. Marcus West's final words, take yourself seriously.
That's it. That's it. Don't be afraid to be the W word, as they say. There's nothing wrong with that from time to time. Don't go too far, but there's nothing wrong with taking yourself seriously.
Love it.
Yeah.
Marcus, thank you so much
for
joining me today. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Where can people go to find out more about 60 Seconds?
Yeah, 60seconds.com.
That's 60, the number 60.
60, the numbers, and seconds.com.
Perfect. Excellent. Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thanks,
and happy teaching.
Thanks again to Marcus West for being my guest this week. If you're wondering what the W word is, it rhymes with banker, anchor, and hanker. To check out the app 60 Seconds, go to 60seconds.com. I'll put a link to that, as well as how you can get in touch with Marcus, in the show notes at thecmethod.com/Marcus. That's M-A-R-C-U-S. Now, if you liked this episode, please don't keep it to yourself. This world is big enough for more downloads. I'd really appreciate it if you could share it with someone. Share the Facebook post if this is how you found it. Share the show notes link, thecmethod.com/Marcus. It helps to spread the word of this show and help more people to build confidence and speak and present like a rock star. And I want to help as many people as possible. I would love, love, love if you could do that. Share this episode. It would be a huge help. Alrighty, and to wrap up, just reflecting on one thing that Marcus quoted, as you go forth into your day today, or tomorrow, if you're listening to this at night, remember that all the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. So, how will you show up and play? Thanks for listening, you rockstar you. I'll see you same time next week. I cannot wait. Keep on being awesome, my friend. My name's Christina Canters, and this has been Stand Out, Get Noticed. So I found out this week that The Commitments, the band, were actually like a band from a movie. They weren't an actual band. Anyway, I've got to watch that movie, The Commitments. But anyway, I like this song. Mustang Sally.
Mustang Sally. Guess you gotta put your flat feet on the ground, yeah.